Hello, good afternoon. I'm excited to be here today and see some familiar faces. So Lisa and I bring complementary backgrounds to this presentation, so I'm excited for her to give you her perspective. But my own, for the last 13 years, I have worked at Taos and have evolved with the company and the industry of technology, and have spent the majority of my time on the talent side. So not only creating the strategy to attract, hire, develop, and retain top technical talent, but really get in there and work closely with our consultants and candidates in understanding what it is that they want, you know, from their careers. How do they position themselves? How do we align that to our clients? And so very often I find women downplay their skill sets, where I find just when working with some of the male consultants or candidates, they have no problem putting it out there, and this is at no, you know, offense to the males in the room, but, you know, putting it out there, and even I find if I'm comparing them, one sort of likes to exaggerate or make the story a little bit more than it actually is. And on the female side, we tend to downplay and not put it all out there and actually cover up some of the skills and even desires of what it is that they want. And so I'm bringing 13 years of experience working in that area and how we uncover it and how to look at it and frame negotiation from the perspective of what is it that you want? How do you frame it to the party that you are talking to, and not have it feel like a big deal or have it feel uncomfortable for you? So I'll give it over to Lisa right now to tell her perspective.
Hi, I'm Lisa Groves, and I also work at Taos. I'm an engagement manager, meaning simply that I represent the consultants out in the field. I'm the face of Taos for people on site. I also have a background that I feel dovetails nicely into this talk, which is I'm a clinical psychologist, and I've done a lot of research, actually specifically to eating disorders and overeating, which isn't relevant, but I would love to talk to any of you after, if you're interested. And but more than that, really looks, I'm excited about this because we're also looking at the psychology of the workplace and how to get your needs met in a culturally acceptable way, because it continues to be so frustrating that often the same behavior in men is seen as too aggressive or too bullying in women. And so first what we wanted to do was go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves, say one thing that you hope to get out of our talk today, and also name anything that you would be willing to swim in. And that's just a fun exercise. You can take it wherever you want to be. But if you could swim in anything, what would it be?
Can we start with you, Emily?
Sure. Do you want us to go up to the mic or just?
You can, yeah. Just speak up.
Okay.
That's a good one. I think someone said, what is that?
It's this fun cornstarch and water solution where you squeeze it and it's harder.
That's great. And we are going to touch on how to present what you need in a way that's as, that people can respond to effectively. So best practices in how to present yourself. And what would you want to swim in? A particular color? Thank you. Well, and Carolyn, I'm especially expecting your participation because I know you had even considered giving this talk. So I think you have a lot of value to add.
Hi, my name is Welcome. I'm a graduate student, and what I expect of the session is to be more assertive.
point saying it's not worth, you know, going ahead and making it an argument, but I want to learn how to be assertive instead of, you know, switching it to argumentative. So, you know, kind of keep people on the track and still assert themselves. Mm-hmm. That's probably something I'm looking at. And I think it's in clouds. Mm-hmm. Oh. You know, a little bit of cloud.
Thank you. You'll have to report back.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm guessing that you'll also have a lot to contribute today.
I will catch up.
Oh, we're introducing ourselves, saying what you hope to get out of this presentation workshop and what you would swim in, if you could swim in anything. Yeah, I'm hearing very much a theme that we're going to get to, which is kind of that whole life cycle of negotiation, from figuring out what you want to branding yourself to getting what you want once you're in that position, and doing it in such a way that's not passive aggressive, that's not aggressive, that remains authentic to who you are. Thank you. Wonderful. Nice. And I think you might have walked in after we had gone around. I just want to say quickly, just in the snapshots that you've given, I wish I had time to talk with each of you individually, because it's so fascinating what everyone's coming in with.
Sure, so let's dive into it. So the life cycle of negotiation throughout your career, how many individuals, by a show of hands, approach negotiation as a process? Okay, good, so about half. How many approach it with a very specific, defined process? Sort of a methodology that you follow, that you have your, or is it kind of, okay, yeah, it's kind of a little bit organic each time, but here are the steps that I take. Some, a little bit? Okay, so we're gonna be getting into negotiation, the practice of it. And looking at it as a process. So for somebody over here, you mentioned being shy. If you as you approach your work, you're not shy as you're doing your work, right? And I find working with individuals who maybe don't believe themselves to be assertive or think that in order to negotiate, you have to be assertive, right? And that's where we get sort of confused with the attributes, right? Male attributes, you know, usually you see assertive underneath that. Female attributes, you see a little bit more, accommodating, right? So, but if we're looking at it as a process and a methodology that we use when we're approaching this this decision part of our career or getting to the next stage, it can have a different effect or impact on how you think about it and how you put yourself into that role. Identifying what you want. Very often, I find that individuals have a hard time articulating what it is that they want. And sometimes it can be, well, I want more money. Sometimes it can be, I want more exposure to this technology. I want more work-life balance. All these require, are a negotiation if you're looking to advance into another career, department, role. But being able to articulate that is not always easy. So we're going to get into that a bit. Branding and finding your voice goes along with, once you've identified it, now you've branded. How do you brand yourself? Because we're in the world of social media now, and everybody has the potential to be, a media star, so to speak, and that there's many different ways to put yourself out there. And really consciously and with some intention, designing how that looks for you, what are the steps to do that? Speaking up, we talked a bit about speaking up to get that promotion, to get on that project, or to increase your pay. So if you look at this as almost the lifestyle of negotiation, sometimes it's also knowing when to move on then from a role or a team, a career. Like you said that, okay, it's time to move on, but then what? And then you go back to the beginning.
So in discussing this life cycle of negotiation, in a sense from birth to death of negotiation, trademark Trish and Lisa, we hope you'll take away several objectives. And I feel like, luckily, this really aligns with some of the things that you mentioned in the beginning with wanting to get out of this. We will be discussing what negotiation is and is not, and helping you to figure out for yourself today what it is that you want out of your career, as well as helping you to understand the company culture that you're in, the market, how to best assert yourself. Often tone is one of the most effective tools through which to present what you want. It is amazing how differently people respond to your needs when you present it in a really calm way versus escalated or kind of attacking to that person. And knowing how to sell yourself, both in terms of getting a position, and then once you're at the company that you want to be, how do you sell yourself in getting a promotion, in being on a particular project, in getting a raise? Trish actually is my boss's boss. I'm hoping to have an opportunity to model. and last, as we talked about, sometimes it is time to move on. Sometimes you will not get what you need at the company you're at. So how do you recognize that? How do you recognize that you've come to the point that you can no longer change the environment to a place that it's more amenable and it is time to move on?
So in getting to what negotiation is, number one, it's a give and take process. It's between one party or between more than two more parties, and it's a give and take. So very interesting over the years of whether it's negotiating salary, whether negotiating parameters of an assignment with a client, there's certain, you see the various stages, and there's individuals that approach it with this very, over here you're saying, to be assertive, right? And I don't know necessarily, I wouldn't put assertive in there. What I would put in is authentic, a genuine. And I think that sometimes we feel the pressure of a negotiation and that if we don't come across assertive, then we're looking weak. In fact, I think when you're putting yourself in more of an authentic spot, which is this is what I want and this is why I believe I deserve it, and then let me go and gather information on what supports that claim, is sometimes versus sort of getting into a, this is why assertive sometimes can be, but you're not listening to me, I'm telling you, and it sort of closes the conversation off on some level. So assertive isn't always a part of it. I think it's really that genuine desire to move on and being able to articulate why. And it's usually mutual, it's mutually beneficial, right? It's not a, I was talking to a friend last week who lives on the East Coast and is having a problem with her job. She's not very happy with it. It was M&A type of activity, and it's just not the company or the role that she signed up for 8 years ago, and it's completely different. And I said, well, what are you going to do about it? And she said, well, I don't know. I'm really confused. I'm going to have to go in, but I'm going to have to be ready to walk if they don't give me the increase that I want. Because she was very annoyed. She found out that there were individuals who came in with less years experience at a higher pay, right? So anybody would be annoyed with that. So I said to her, okay, so you're not negotiating then. If you say you're going to walk, if they don't give you what you want, that's not a negotiation. And she kind of stopped and said, you're right. And I said, well, then you need to, what homework have you done? You know, what, why are they, or, you know, why are they getting this? Is this sort of a new sort of salary, entry-level salary that they're getting? What's the criteria? What's the difference between the company that you worked for and the company that took over? Well, I don't know. Okay, so it's sort of remove yourself emotionally from it, because we know that when we're that emotional over something, and it hurts if you find out that you're more experienced, more qualified, and there's individuals out there who are getting paid more than you. And it feels like a blow to the ego, but in order to get clarity, we have to remove ourselves from the situation and objectively look at the facts, because typically that's what the other party is doing when they're looking at you. So it's get out of the victim role, get more empowered, understand the data that's out there in your current situation, and then in the marketplace. Because there's a lot of technology companies, the industry, where with all this innovation going on, things like salaries fluctuate, fringe benefits. So keeping your finger on the pulse of that and kind of packages, criteria to join certain parties, understand what that is before diving into the negotiation. Demanding, sometimes this is what I want. You know, we feel like, I think that's sort of the assertive piece. We feel like we can't back down, I'm putting it out there. But instead of approaching it that way, it's really thinking about, okay, what are the parameters that I'm willing to, the zone that I'm willing to work within? This will be a win-win for both of us, but this is where I draw the line. These are the things I'm willing to make some concessions on, and these are the areas that I'm not. And so understanding where that line is throughout the conversation will really help guide and direct it and put you in a, making you feel like you're more in the driver's seat. And a single solution, approaching any type of discussion, negotiation with, it's this way or the highway, once again, not a negotiation. We have to be open and, again, objective to understanding where they're going to make concessions, where you may be willing to make concessions, and take it, you know, one step at a time going in. But it's really having that plan, having that data, and, you know, understanding those parameters, and then having being able to sort of get into. Did you just press that? Okay, I was like. So the preparation, so the stages. So we break it down into preparation. You know, so negotiation is not an hour-long process. It's usually much longer than that. Doing preparation, so collecting the facts, the dialogue and exchange. So when you sit down for the first time, what are those key components you have to convey? Write them down before you even get into that conversation. Three things are, this is the salary, that's important. These are the, this is the role and this is the type of work, right? Whatever they may be, but make sure there's usually three main objectives that you're working for. This is it, this is what we're talking about today, and the other party should have their three things. So then you kind of have them together as you start off the conversation, and then go into shaping what that solution could look like, and go back and forth. And so it doesn't have to be, it's a tug of war, but it doesn't have to be hostile or aggressive. Think about it in a way of you're shaping an outcome, helping shape or design an outcome, and versus I'm in it to win it in a way that sort of I'm either going to conquer you or you're going to conquer me, because I think that you won't be able to get there then. Finalize the outcome and solution. Where are you landing and how does it work for both parties involved? And then defining the next steps, what needs to take place in order to move on. Does anyone have any questions about that? Go ahead. I think that's an excellent point.
And so my question is,
I think the difference is here. It's how we approach it. I talked earlier about sort of somebody who is shy may not see, because we look at negotiation as a someone's going to win, someone's going to lose, right? Or sometimes we approach it with that win-win if we're being optimistic. But it feels personal. When you're solving a problem at work, it usually feels like I'm doing this for the better of the team, of the organization, of the company, and it's a little bit more objective. Right.
And so, you know, the thing that helped me a lot when I was learning to negotiate salary was realizing that it was just an economic decision of who gets the economic rent here.
Right. That's straightforward. I do think if you're going in with this, if it's just about money, then that's very defining. That's either yes or no, right? Many times I find in negotiations it's more than that. There's at least a few critical elements at play, but I mean, that's a very clear-cut case. The other thing, you know, is you're sometimes negotiating before you even know it in collecting the data, but it can be also how you're working with your team and observations that are being made beforehand that, you know, are part of the other party's data collection. That if you're going in for a promotion and or let's say to lead a team, here's your chance, there's a great project coming up. You think the technology will be challenging, you think the leading the team will be the right opportunity for you to start to flex these muscles. And you've been there long enough, you have the seniority, and you're ready to throw your hat in the ring. And you sit down with the director, whoever's making the decision, you say, this is what I want to do, and they say, gosh, I don't know, I think that this requires somebody with more collaborative or collaboration skills, and you think, what? You've never said this before, collaboration skills, and that's what I mean. I think at every step of the process, whether you're in an environment, understanding how others are viewing you, so being able to really have awareness around your environment, how others in the organization or on your team are viewing you, and asking proactively for that feedback, so when the big negotiation comes up, you know, you have a better sense of how they're viewing you, because I do find it at times very surprising when someone will say, well, I can't believe this. They never told me this before. And I just feel like, I felt like I was going in and I was qualified, but now I'm finding out I'm not even qualified, and this is shocking news to me. And I think that is about awareness of your surroundings and the individuals who are making the decisions. So even before you go, part of that data collection, or even before you get to that negotiation stage, because we all know that within the span of a career or a role, we will be negotiating for something. Don't take advantage or that you think everybody knows or you feel like you're on the same page with how everybody's viewing you and your work and impact to the organization or contributions to the team. Ask, you know, where are the gaps? Where can I improve? What do you feel like I bring to the table for, or what are my strengths?
You brought up a good point in that there can be different ways to refer to it. There's this old school business textbook called Getting to Yes, and it's wonderful because it really helps you to work to identify what the common solution is. So like Trish mentioned, what's mutually beneficial for all parties. And it could be a situation like a salary where quantitatively it's going to remain different, but it could be a little more fluid where the difference is really just in the mechanism by which to get there, but the outcome is the same once you're able to identify it. And so now that we've started to talk about this practice of negotiation, what we want to look at now is very specifically the steps involved. So now in your head, you kind of have the framework of how you'll approach it. And so what do you want to approach? And the first step is identifying what you want. So So when you think about the type of career, is it something managerial? Is it something more hands-on? Is it something system administrative? Is it something where you have a really broad reach? Or is it the type of company where it's much more siloed, and so you feel able to really dive into what you know? And so what I would love to do is take a couple minutes, and for yourself, just think about what's most important for you in a career. Is it work-life balance, if you were to rank some of these? Is it to being stimulated? Is it to being pushed? Is it to always being able to learn new things? Is it salary? Is the compensation and benefits the most important thing to you? Because it's important to know that, because that can really inform the type of place you want to apply for. So this is that first stage, or this is the stage at the very end when you're thinking about moving on, because if you realize in making this list that your current company isn't meeting those needs, maybe you give them the opportunity to meet them, or you identify something that works for you better. So yeah, I want people to take a couple minutes and just kind of start to identify what they're really seeking for themselves. And then I'll take a couple of volunteers. And if you volunteer, you get a nice Taos notebook to share what you write. So I'll just give you a couple minutes right now just to think about what works for yourself. Well, while we're fixing, we can go ahead and have two people, if they want to come up, or if you just want to speak to your, from your table, and talk about and kind of starting to think about what you really want out of your position. How would that look? You get a notebook. Maybe I'll just do one person, one volunteer. Wonderful. Thank you.
So the good news is I just started a new job probably now about 5-6 weeks ago. And I was hired,
What does that look like for you? Did you talk what that would look like in terms of daily or weekly, monthly, and compare it to the vision of the other individual, your boss, who agreed to that?
Thank you.
Right.
So we haven't had them yet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what it is creating that timeline in terms of, here's when you came to me with this original position. This is why I said no. This is when you came back to me and offered me this other piece. And since starting, this has been my experience to date. And so how will this look different going forward? Because we agreed upon one thing, but my experience is saying something different. So, and you have to ask yourself, what is it that will make you feel like they're fulfilling their end of the bargain?
Mm-hmm. And to bring it back to mutually beneficial, it's going to be hard until they identify another recruiter, but thinking about how will it help him to have you in that other role? You know, how will it help the company? Right. And even beginning with that framework.
That's incredibly
powerful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's why we're here.
Is there anybody else who wanted to share?
Yes.
No?
We'll have more opportunities for everyone to talk. So you figured out what you want and what's most important to you, and now you have to figure out how to create that identity, how to shape it, how to give a voice to it. And so we often find it's really helpful to just come back to that elevator pitch. You know, in 2 minutes, what can you say to someone in the elevator that really taps into what you're good at? I'll give you a little bit of time to think about it, and then I'll have a volunteer come up, and we're gonna ride an elevator together.
And this could be, I mean, just to give it some more context and flavor, it could be you're riding in the elevator with, a new director for the organization that you're working for. You're riding in the elevator with your immediate boss, who you report into. You're riding in the elevator with the CEO of the organization. And it just really, and what you have in mind, too, in terms of what you're trying to convey in that moment. But often in speaking with candidates or consultants, and when I ask, what's your elevator pitch? Because that will help us. If your elevator pitch is almost your sort of your vision, your sort of two sentences way of defining yourself, that to the person, and you spin it depending on to who you're talking with, but it's still authentic. It's not about compromising or embellishing what you do, but I'll give an example. We have a very friendly, more outgoing, jovial CEO.
Very charismatic.
Very charismatic. And, you know, and it took me a while to realize this. No, but I think, and because he's so engaging, because he's so friendly, he'll walk into the kitchen at the office and be like, hey, how are you doing? How's it going? And I'll overhear somebody say, oh, it's going well. I just got back from vacation and I was doing this, or I've signed up for this, because he's a big bike rider. I signed up for this new, you know, bike ride and I've been training. And you know what? He's the CEO and he's very friendly, but he wants to hear what you're doing for the company. He wants to hear how your role is going and how business is going. And I, you know, will often pull people aside and say, that's great. Wait for him, you know, at times though, to get into the personal. He wants a snapshot of what it is that you're doing, what it is that you're feeling or seeing in the business, what's your perspective on it? And, you know, he's welcoming of opinions and, you know, this has been my experience, but along those lines, because sometimes we miss those cues. And especially if someone is charismatic as that, you get right drawn into the, oh, he wants to get to know me and I'm going to share, you know, this versus CEOs are thinking about their business first and foremost every day and how is it operating. So to be able to have an opinion or a viewpoint can be very valuable.
Yeah, yeah. So right now I want one volunteer. You get a notebook and you're riding the elevator with your boss's boss. I know your face, but I actually don't know your name. And so you want to think about how to pitch yourself to me in an elevator ride. Who wants to go? This can be great exposure if you're shy. Yeah, great, wonderful, thank you. Yes, yeah, you can come up.
So picture an elevator.
Yeah, I'm probably going to recount an experience of mine.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Swapna, is it? It's great to see you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good.
I'm actually Swapna, and I'm actually an intern at your firm, and I've been here since like 2 months ago, and it's been a great experience for me.
Wonderful.
You know what? I'm working on this part of the feature, the product, and I think I've got to contribute a lot working on the anxiety feature. So what do you think about the new interns at the company? So, I mean, I'm kind of the fourth intern in the company, so it's great to meet you. What are the words that you would say to me?
Well, I'm really excited with this new crop of interns. Mm-hmm. I think you're doing a great thing for the company.
I've heard a lot about how you worked on this particular product and how you started off. So I'm just a grad student, and I'm looking at a lot of ideas post my internship. Mm-hmm. So maybe a startup or maybe something later. What do you think you have tips to share with me?
Oh, I'll have to think on that one.
Because I remember learning about you that you mm-hmm. did a startup on your own mm-hmm. and with your colleague at some point of time. So what is the best suggestion that you would give me? What's the path that I should take currently?
Mm-hmm. I think one thing is making connections with people like me mm-hmm. because it's those relationships that will make huge difference in addition to identifying a good product to make a startup from.
That's a great piece of advice. So on that, can I actually ask you for a time sometime during the
sure.
schedule, probably
sure.
a lunch, probably some 15 minutes of your recess time?
That sounds great.
Okay, thank you. That would be wonderful.
You can contact my secretary.
Can I actually have some scheduled time for next week or any specific amount of time where I can reach you? Probably you're going to have a
good time. That's good. Yes.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Good job. Very good.
It was very clear and very specific.
Yeah. Right.
That, I did not have much of an idea at that point, but I know I can always go back to him and, you know, at some point, if I do have a much of an idea, I can always go back and tell him, you know what, can I take up on that offer? So
that's fantastic. Yeah, and I think people do appreciate that boldness, especially if it's data driven. So, you know, you have the statistics, you have the actual evidence of what you've done successfully, you know, and yeah. That's great, thank you. I was just excited to have an administrative assistant. So,
does anyone want to go back to the elevator pitch, though?
Yes.
Because, and part of that, you know, I think the branding is important. And it's a new concept. I think it's really kind of understanding, you know, what it is that you want to do. We talk about negotiation and how sometimes it can start early on before we sit down. And so if you're sort of in a role within an organization and you have a clear sense of where it is you want to go, do you have that two-sentence sort of elevator pitch down? And how does that come off? And given that there are varying degrees of people that you interact with and their roles in the environment, how does that change? I mean, is that something that everyone here sort of thinks about on a kind of weekly basis, if there's something active that you're moving towards?
I think it definitely has to be tailored to the audience. It depends who
right.
you're talking to, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. whether they care about this aspect of your work or that aspect of your work.
And so how does that play out for you?
Just have to be prepared, because you just never really walk down the hall and your director walks out of the men's room and says, hey, how you doing? And you just don't expect that.
Right. Well, many of us have been caught in that, yeah, fine, right? And then you walk away with.
And he walks down the hall with you and you have this conversation until he turns and goes into his office. Cool.
And in that time, have you used it effectively?
Yeah, or are you like completely baffled that, anytime your kids or something, instead of taking that opportunity.
That, yeah.
Cool
that small window.
Yeah.
And to either convey how well you're doing and knowledgeable you are about it, or how enthusiastic you are about it. And it, you can slice these off into small challenges too, because I even remember when starting at, you know, my company, and I had left for a while and I came back, and this same CEO used to walk around very gregarious and say, "Hey, you," and I knew "Hey, you" meant he doesn't even know my name. And I thought, oh my God, that totally sucks. He doesn't know my name, right? And I was like, all right, I'm going to take the challenge on. I'm going to get him to know my name, right? And that was, I was, you know, chipping it off in little bits, but I'm not going to get anywhere with him if he doesn't know my name, right? So then I made it a point to kind of, you know, get in front of him with useful information for, you know, a few times a week, to the point where he started to say, "Hey, Trish," and to me that was a small win. And then next it was, "Hey, you know what? They look like they're doing something really interesting in that room. I want to be part of that conversation. How do I get into that room?" Right, and doing that, right, and knowing that along the way, these were sort of small milestones to what I was eventually going to be doing in the next role. And so it was just trying the awareness of the environment and knowing being attentive to myself, to what it was that I was responding to and what it was that was interesting me, and just taking it, breaking it down into small attainable pieces. So,
so depending on the stage that you're at, once you've figured out a way to highlight who you are and your skill set, how do you interview for that new job? One thing I'm a huge advocate of is identifying the mission of the company, and you weave it into everything in a very subtle way, but you weave it into your cover letter, you weave it into the interview, and it's just this wonderful way for the person to feel like you're resonating with the company. Thinking before you enter that interview of both strengths and weaknesses, and also very specific examples. Thinking about situations that maybe didn't work out as well and how you ended up resolving it. Thinking about real world problems and how, yeah, as I mentioned, how you reconciled it. And I think another key piece of the interview that often people forget about because it can be so nerve-wracking is that you want to enjoy it. Interviews are actually found to be very poor predictors of how someone performs on a job. People tend to, when you walk into the room, the interviewer decides immediately whether they really want to hire you or not, and it's not really based on much data. But that said, part of the interview can serve to show if interpersonally you're going to be a good fit with the company. And so just simply trying to enjoy the process can help tremendously. So what we were thinking of doing with this, but in the interest of time, we might just go on to the next one.
Okay. What time? What's the time check?
Yeah, we have 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go on to the next one, and then if we have time to practice interviewing, we'll come back.
Are there any questions, though?
Yes.
Anyone getting ready for an interview or preparing for an interview or feel like interview tips will be helpful?
Moment, and I found that the enjoy part is something that I try to give to the person.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we sit down and we go over to the coffee shop at one point during the day and sit and talk about things that don't really have to do with the specific job. So it's useful for us to figure out what that person is like and what they're really socially like, and useful for that person to get familiar with everybody and really feel.
So
like
that's the cultural fit piece.
Yeah,
and it's, yes. I was just going to say, actually, it's really interesting. So The Economist has done a series of articles on the fact that there's actually a lot of available positions, and yet we retain about 7.5% unemployment. And one of the reasons is companies don't want to do training on the job. So there's these internet-based applications. It's very difficult to get through that first process to get into the interview. And now, often more than skill set, companies are really looking at that cultural fit. It's just it's a shift from how it looked 20 years ago.
Finding ways to find out
I love that you brought that up, because one reason I actually came to Taos was specifically because there's a high number of women in executive positions. So for me, that was a tool that was very important for me to identify, especially after coming out of academics. Taos is the first job in 14 years that I'm not affiliated with an academic institution. And so it's in academics at a professor level, it can be hard to find women. And so like I was seeking something which had a different energy to it. I think with questions like that, what can be helpful is if you're able to talk to who would be your peers. You know, if the company allows you to talk to people that currently work there. Because I think that's where you can get more of a sense, okay, day-to-day architecture, what does it really look like? What are you able to do? What are you not able to do? No, and I know because the key trickiness to this is you don't want the peer or the executive to take that message away as this person will be difficult and will be challenging how we operate. So that's actually something, a question I might put back to the audience or Trish about an actual question itself.
I think one general safe question to ask is, how do you promote diversity in your organization? Right, without getting too specific on what do you mean by diversity? I think questions in general around that topic of diversity helps get into that. Or can you tell me kind of the path to the hiring criteria and how it ensures a certain level of diversity? I think that. And you can get a glimpse on what is your philosophy on, around diversity. And I think that's, you can tell by how they respond.
I think the most qualified person, I don't care, is the response.
I don't care. And I think that's your answer in terms of,
go ahead. Wow.
There was some strong head nodding back here. Do you have questions? Right.
Mm-hmm. And just how their conversations go with you tells you something else. Mm-hmm. I actually got a high-ranking university administrator sitting in me and go, what do you mean we can't ask people if they're married? I just looked at it. This was a woman. This was not a man. This was a woman. And I just looked at her and said, tell me you are kidding. And she wasn't. She had no idea that this was an illegal question to ask.
I know.
That's a good point, though, because it's the given that you're going to be the only woman or maybe one of two women in that room of techies, right?
And I don't want to totally derail all this.
Oh, no, no, no. I think all of this is very relevant.
In this particular case, so there were some other cues. So in addition to the fact that all of the people who were in the mail, there was only one, at that time, there was only one person who was over the age of 35. Mm-hmm. All of them were dressed very similarly. There was, I would say that they were impolite. They weren't inappropriate. But it was clear that there was a certain kind of culture going on there, and if you worked in a tech company, you know what I'm talking about. And I looked at myself and I looked at these people, and the two individuals that I knew from being introduced by other people in the company, I recognized the fact that this team was being stacked in a very particular way, because clearly someone was probably feeling a little intimidated by their lack of experience as a manager, and so they were, hiring people who were a lot younger than them to sort of protect their position.
So some questions that I do successfully is to bring up or like name drop women in whatever field I'm talking about and see if they are aware of them. If there's some way to get them talking about, so for example, I am in a company where there's a manager, so I would ask them, how their relationship with how management worked in the event, so you can get a sense of how they respond to women in power, that sort of thing. But I found, random folks or around Boston, it's often there's certain people they don't know. And so I'll make drop, and see where, which circles they're running in, basically.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can also get a feel for power structure in the room, too, by who asks the questions. Like, if you're in a room with 10 or 12 people, and only three or four of them ask you questions, that says something about the power structure, right? The other thing that happened in this particular case, was over kind of a lunch meeting, so I was given the opportunity to ask them questions. And some of them were very, some folks were very specific and responsive. Other people, it was almost like they didn't want to talk. And, that kind of told me some things about the power structure as well. Mm-hmm. But, sometimes I think one of the things that I tell my female friends is, trust your instincts. If you feel that there's something off about a situation, chances are something is off
right.
in the situation.
Yeah. So in the interest of time, we have 7 minutes left, and so I'm just going to run through the next sequence of tips, and then the very last exercise is an opportunity to integrate everything. So once you're at the company, how do you find your voice? How do you expand your position? We really talk to the fact of speaking up in meetings, and don't apologize. Don't question yourself. Have relevance in what you're saying, and come in with data. Know what the meeting is going to be about. Know what you plan to share. Know how you plan to contribute. Know how you plan to stand out. My personal problem is I tend to get tangential, whether I'm teaching or in a meeting. So that's what I'm working on. But and also understanding the market and the culture of where you're at. Like how does the company do its meetings? Are the meetings pretty casual? Are the meetings really formal? Are they regular? So I really like our scenarios that we had come up with. So I'll just mention what it was, but we'll move forward. But you recognize there are errors in the time estimates in this project planning meeting. How do you bring up those errors? Just think about it. Another thing that can frequently occur once you're in your position is you want a role change, or you want to be on a project that they haven't thought of putting you on. And how do you address that in a way that's not combative, that's not aggressive, that allows for this opportunity of getting to yes, this mutually beneficial place, you know? And it's really thinking about the value you will contribute to the project and taking away your personality from it, you know, taking away the emotions. It's just very data driven. You know, because of this skill set that I have, I can help speed the project along. I can help make it more financially efficient. Because of the skill set I have, you don't need to hire two additional people. Whatever it might be, that's what your manager will hear and respond to. And thinking for yourself, and this comes back to that first slide when we were talking about how to define what you want. But thinking about for yourself, how will being in this project or being in this role help get you to where you want to be? When I work with consultants on motivation, something that we had touched on, but a key thing I do is I have people step back, think about where they want to be in 5 years, and think about what they're doing today, how that helps get them there. Because sometimes you're doing some rote tasks that feel menial and are really frustrating. And when you can come back to that big picture and think about how this gets you to where you want to go, that can help motivate you in the moment. And sometimes it is getting on that project or getting that promotion that will best propel you to where you want to be.
Can I add something?
Yes. I am so happy you brought that up, because that ties into enjoying the interview process. And it also, I think that's a really nice, snazzy way that ties into how it can be difficult if you've never done something specific and you feel like your male counterparts are still confident about it and you're not, is maybe focusing on how much you would enjoy doing it rather than that specific thing that you've already done with it. Because you're spot on. People seek out that energy.
You know, it's funny, as you're talking, I, you know, wondering how many people in the room think enthusiasm is as critical, if not more, than assertiveness when presenting, you know, because sometimes I think assertiveness can tap into the wrong, where the enthusiasm is more that shared win-win in terms of, I'm so excited that the company is doing this, that the organization is planning on doing, any way I can be involved.
It can be infectious.
Yeah, it's infectious, it is, right. And it feels, you know, it feels that it's you're contributing it, or it's a collaboration piece. So that's, and I had never occurred to it as you're talking, it just. Right. Right.
No, I think that's a really valuable point. So the last thing that we wanted to do, recognizing we only have 2 minutes, so it might be an exercise you take home with you, but we have extra books, is identifying a role, project, or career that really taps into your goals and values and where you want to go. Maybe that's within the company that you're at right now. Maybe it's something that can't be met by the company where you're at, and you know, what would it look like? Where would you want to go? Thinking about the steps that would get you there, and thinking about our practice of negotiation that we discussed, you know, how would you negotiate to get yourself there? In 1 minute.
Oh, it's a break. We can go over a little bit. So, I mean, maybe we just talk through this. I mean,
let's talk through it.
Is there anyone who's willing to share? Go ahead.
So, actually, I just did a
clients?
You have to, well, not so much that. You have to meet a bunch of standards that generally don't apply to other parts of the network. And so in my last job, I not only did that, but I also wrote the policies for the Unix environment that went with it, and I did the documentation for the information security people that went along with it, and I dealt with the auditors and a whole bunch of other stuff. And so since I had done all that at like three jobs in a row, when my last company decided to outsource everybody, that was one of the things that I told the new folks, that if they wanted me to come on board to help them manage this account, they were going to have to move me into an information security role. Right? And then I would still do my duties as a system administrator to help get their team up to speed to take over this stuff, but my ultimate goal was to move into information security. And so they agreed to that. But I also interviewed outside because I wasn't sure that I wanted to go to the outsourcing company because I didn't really like the information security team at my last company. And so that was one of the key things. Managing those PCI environments was also a key selling point for me to when I interviewed at the job that I have now.
Did you recognize that at the time that you were doing that was going to be a key part of getting the opportunity?
I specifically volunteered to take on that part of the system administration environment because I knew that was going to be the only thing that would lead me where I needed to go, because other aspects of post security are not really seen in the same light in information security departments.
Right. And what was your negotiation like? Just did the experiences outside interviewing other places help you in your negotiation as well, or did it just give you more context, more just options?
It was mostly an options thing. I actually, because of timing, I had actually accepted the job with the outsourcing company, and I actually had to rescind my acceptance of the offer because I was very open with everyone about that situation. Everyone knew that I had interviewed, there was no attempt to hide. It was just
you're transparent.
In my experience, when you're open and honest with people about what your goals are, they generally, take you at face value.
Mm-hmm. I do think that's key. Many times we feel like we have to not lie, but maybe not completely put all our goals out there if we feel like it's not in alignment with the organization. And I think it is a fine line, but if you're comfortable with it and you see ability to reach those goals in different ways within an organization, I think that the more that you're able to kind of get comfortable around it, talk about it, it's less of a mountain to climb at the end of the day when you're sort of setting yourself up for that fight. It's not a surprise to anybody. That transparency is probably critical as well. Transparency, enthusiasm, and that takes time, though. You have to get comfortable with it. You have to understand, I think we all go through, most of us, that times where we're sort of being a little bit more conscientious about what it is that's within our realm that we can reach and how our goals align to it, and other times and as you work through that, you get a little bit more comfortable with putting it out there and having that transparency. And it's operating from an empowerment standpoint versus fear. I feel we're more comfortable when we're
and my boss was also being outsourced.
Right.
And, you know, he's been very concerned in asking, you know, Mayor, do you feel okay about having the building? I know I'm asking you to do these types of things that you didn't do a lot of in the last job, so are you okay with that? And it's been really refreshing to actually have a manager that's, you know, paying attention for change.
Right.
It makes such a difference. There's a couple things I just want to reiterate because I feel the take-home points that I hope that you got from this. And one is, although we didn't talk as much to tone, just remembering how you presented is so key. So being calm in tone of voice really makes a difference. It helps people not take it defensively. It really helps people be more responsive. Another thing is being data-driven. So whatever conversation you're going to have, think through what questions they're going to ask and how you're going to respond. And the last piece that I think is really important is not only are you thinking about how this potential change ties into your goals and values, but you're thinking about how this ties into what the company wants. You know, that's how you're getting to yes. Like, how is it going to help the company by making this change for you, whether it's your raise, or your role change, or you participating in this project?
I think that's, you said it all there.
I want to add something. I think it can be helpful to get feedback on how you are perceived within the organization.
Right.
That's a good point.
Because sometimes we think we're presenting unemotionally and factually, and we might talk differently about different personalities. I can be kind of hyper and talk really fast, especially when I'm excited. So to get somebody that you trust to give you feedback and say, you slow down,
yeah, and you're walking into a more of a known situation. We mentioned earlier, sometimes you think you may possess a skill, and in fact, someone else who's a decision maker may not see that as a primary strength or even a strength. And so that there changes the level of conversation that you're having. Nicole, did you want to add anything as a final point or? And just, you know, the result of a negotiation not going well and you staying in a situation or anyone staying in a situation usually leads to resentment and close communication. So that's what you don't want, right? And it's to recognize when negotiations don't go your way, what are your options and what direction do you want to go? Because you don't want to be powerless in a situation. That's will only make things worse. So it's realizing, what is it that's going to make you feel empowered? And taking it from there if negotiations for some reason ended up not in your favor. So good to kind of have that awareness as well. Anyone else?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys for participating. Yeah.